Hi, everybody. My name is Erica, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Erica.
My sobriety date is March 17th, 1996, and Midtown's my home group, and I have a sponsor, and I'm very grateful to be here, and I want to thank Billy for asking me to come out. I've been here all weekend in Virginia, actually. I was at a little woman's weekend retreat that my home group puts on every year, and I got to tell you, 100 or so women confined in one place was not my idea of fun before I got here at all, but I look forward to it now every year, and that took a little while for me to get there. And I'm grateful for the friends that came out with me. I was told you never had to do anything alone in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that has absolutely been true. And I come from Rockville, and, you know, we come all the way out here to do this, and we've gone plenty of places all over the place for Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's an honor and a privilege to do anything that's being asked of me here. I'm supposed to tell you in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. I grew up in a home where alcohol was acceptable. It was okay. My entire family pretty much you either needed AA or were married to someone who needed AA. You know, it was kind of like that. And my father pretty much drank every day, and it wasn't really that much fun. It was scary sometimes, and he acted really weird and said some weird things every now and then. And I would be like afraid to come home, and I'd be afraid to have conversations with him. And I knew that alcohol had something to do with why he acted that way, so I decided that I was never going to drink it. Now, we know that didn't happen, because I'm standing here. But I did. I made a decision to never, ever touch this stuff. And I was even like, you know, he and I had even had a conversation about it one time. It actually wasn't really a conversation. We were kind of screaming at each other, and I was calling him an alcoholic, though I didn't know what one was at the time, because I'm 13 years old. But I was calling him an alcoholic, and I was saying some pretty hurtful things to him, and I'm not proud of that. And so I decided not to touch it, and I would, you know, tell people not to touch it, and I would say, you know, like, say no to drugs, like the DARE programs and things like that. I mean, I was definitely an advocate for don't drink, have a good life. You know, whatever. But you know what? I turned 16. I don't know what happened when I turned 16. My parents probably wished I hadn't turned 16, you know, but I started hanging out with some different people. And I remember, this is kind of important to my getting sober story, but I ran into these people the night that they were all getting talked to by their parents for having gotten into trouble for drinking. And somebody that night, actually, and the crew of people that I would become friends with got sent away to a rehab, you know, that night. And we're waiting for them to get, you know, talked to by their parents to come out to hang out with us. And so they come out, and they're, you know, boasting about how, like, yeah, my parents got mad at me. They don't understand, you know, all this stuff. And I'm, like, haven't drank or anything yet, and I'm still that goody two-shoes person, and so I'm like, okay, listen, you really probably shouldn't drink. I mean, they definitely have, you know, they're pretty much trying to, like, love you, and they're really trying to help you here, and that wasn't going over very well with them, but, you know, they politely listened, whatever. But the more I hung out with them, the more I got attracted to what they were doing. You know, like, they were having fun over here, and they were cutting loose over here, and I don't know, they just seemed to be having much more fun. Like, their outside seemed a lot better than what I had going on the inside, honestly. And like, even before this point, I kind of want to backtrack a little bit. Like, I definitely felt, like, uncomfortable in my skin. Kind of like, you know, you don't know where to put your hands. You don't know who to say hi to. You just my whole life. And I grew up in this small town where, like, everybody knew each other. But I felt totally disconnected from all of them. Even though, like, I went to school with these people until I graduated high school. You know what I mean? So we're talking 12 years with the same people. And yet I constantly felt like, I don't know you. You know, and you don't like me. And I had this idea that even if they got to know me, they wouldn't like me. And like, I was, like, born with it or something. I don't quite understand how that all worked out, because it wasn't that my life was really horrible. I mean, my parents put a roof over my head. I mean, yes, my dad drank, and that I didn't like too much. But it wasn't like I was living on the street, or I was looking for, like, food or whatever. It wasn't anything like that, you know. And So I'm not sure where, I just was wired funny. And even my relationship to alcohol was strange because I was attracted to what they were doing. Like my thinking, you know, like every time they would talk about alcohol, it's like my ears would perk up, you know. Well, what is that? You know, and how, what do you mean it makes you feel funny? So, and this is not normal, but this is my first drink. You know, finally I'm hanging out with these people and I feel like, you know what, I'm just going to try it. I'm just going to see how it is. And it's my 16th birthday party and I begged my parents to allow me to stay out all night. As a birthday present, because my curfew was always like 10:30, which makes total sense, really. But I would hate it all the time. So I said, you know, I'm going to have a small party over at a friend's house. Can I just stay there all night? His mom's there, and his mom was there. This was all legit. His mom was nothing like my mom, but so she was like, all right, you know, we'll let you do that. And I think my dad, like, knew what I was going to be doing, you know, because I think we know each other. I mean, this is all looking back, you know what I mean? It took me a really long time to sort of see sort of how this stuff was setting up for me. My father never really ever wanted me too far, like, out of his sight. You know, it took forever for them to let me even walk up into town. You know, it was always like you go to the stop sign and that's it. So when this was a big deal for my parents to let me stay out all night. You know, it was a really big deal. And so I decide that I'm going to plan this birthday party. I'm going to plan it. And so I'm going to get money from people so that I can buy a keg. Okay, so I collect, and now these are just friends, but this is, mind you, a small town, right? So I'm just word of mouth passing, like, I'm going to have a party, do you want to go in on the keg? Cool, give me $5, you know. So people are giving me money, and the party is going to be, like, on a Friday, whatever. So I get there, and the keg is late. Now, I heard from a lot of people that some different people were coming to this party, and I don't know about anybody in this room, but I had this thing where, like, there were popular people in my mind, you know, the people that were in high school, like the homecoming princes and princesses and, like, the quarterbacks of the football team. Those people I did not associate with and actually, like, you know, annihilated in my head because I couldn't actually stand them. But really because I wanted them to be my friend. I mean, that's, like, the honest truth, you know. I just wanted them to like me. Anyway, they're coming to this party. In fact, like, all of my high school is coming to this party because in a small town, like, word of mouth, and here it is, and oh, my God, okay. So the keg is not there. And the quarterback walks in, you know, with the cheerleader, right? and I'm getting nervous because I really, I desperately, desperately want them to accept me, you know? I want them to like me, and I need it. It's like, I don't know, and I'm having a tough time, you know, breathing almost, and I'm really struggling. And so my friend says, listen, I'm going to give you my birthday present early. And he poured me a very tall glass of Southern Comfort. I don't know anything about drinking, so we're not even starting with beer, okay? We're starting with, like, Southern Comfort, okay? So I take a sip of it. And it was nasty, actually. I mean, it tasted like cough medicine, and it was, like, thick, and it was, like, you know, it hurt going down, it burned. I'm like, ew, this is gross, but I drank it, you know, all of it, the entire glass. And I can tell you the date and time of this drink. That's another way I can tell you that I'm totally alcoholic. You may not remember your first drink, and that doesn't make you alcoholic, but I definitely remember my first drink. And as I was drinking it, I was like, okay, what's going on? You know, nothing's really happening. Because it takes a little while. I don't know how alcohol works. Like, this is my very first drink, right? All of a sudden, everything came into focus. Like, I don't know, like, the world shifted and color. It was like, I didn't care about the keg. I didn't care if the keg ever got there or not, you know? I didn't care about the high school quarterback. I didn't care about his girlfriend. I was okay. And it seriously felt like, boom, and everything switched. And I felt like, now I know why people drink. Now I know, you know? And it was like an answer to a problem I didn't even know I had, you know? And I thought, I'm going to, and this is what I thought, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. I'm going to drink this for the rest of my life. I envisioned, you know, being a grandmother, rocking in my chair with my little wine beside my feet, you know what I mean, with my grandkids or whatever, But I was not going to let it go. I mean, and being 16, and that night I was drinking other people's drinks as well, and drugs are a small part of my story, but they are a part of my story, and I tried drugs that night, but I loved it. I just loved everything about it. But being 16, you can't get it every day. But I thought about it every day from that point on, you know? It was like a light switch. And I would see where the parties were. I would try to finagle and find things out. And my parents were really strict, and I'm really, really grateful for that, because I really think that my story could have been so much worse than it was, you know, had they not been the way they were, you know? So I couldn't get out all the time. And so I'm going into my 10th grade year, and some things that happened to me as a result of my drinking was I was someone who was going to be playing college basketball. In fact, I was the point guard, shooting guard for my team, for my varsity team, and people knew me. I mean, this is to show my perception, you know, was so off. I mean, people really did. I had some talent, you know. I could do stuff. I did chorus for a really long time, so I could sing. You know, I did. I played the piano for a while, and I did that, but I wasn't perfect with it, so we had to let it go. You know, because it took practice, and I didn't want to practice. You know, I did flute, did that pretty well. You know, I mean, the truth is the things that I touched and the things that I put energy in really did actually go well, but my insides just didn't feel that. Like, I couldn't connect to that, you know? And drinking filled those holes, you know? And so when my varsity coach asked me to sign a waiver saying I wouldn't drink or get high during the season, you know, I couldn't do it. I couldn't sign it. And so I gave up. I don't know if I gave it up, because I don't think it was like a choice for me at this point, you know. I couldn't stop drinking, you know. And mind you, I still wasn't doing it every day yet. But I just couldn't imagine not doing it. And I thought, well, if she finds me, she's going to kick me off anyway. And it's such bogus anyway. And he wants to play basketball anyway. But I loved basketball. It was like a passion of mine, you know. But I surrendered it. You know, drinking took it. I just wanted to do that more. So now, we're not doing anything, okay? Like, I got nothing for my parents to be proud of now, you know what I mean? I'm barely showing up to class. It's my junior year, and that's an important year for people who want to go to college. I kept telling myself I didn't want to go to college. I just kept surrendering things to drinking. I got my license, which was pretty cool, and I went out drinking the night before at this party, and then in the morning my parents wanted me to go get something, and I wasn't coherent enough, and I totaled my mom's car. This was like pretty much 2 weeks after I got my license, and then about 4 months after that, I was driving my friends. I was going just to drink. That's it. And these people were coming with me to drink too. And we were drinking in the woods, because that's what I have to do, because I'm not going to the bar or anything like that yet. Actually, I did start going to the bar before I was legal, but I'm not in that. I'm not doing that yet. I'm just like hanging out and drinking in the woods. And I had to be home by 10:30. And I kept looking at my clock, right? And I'm like, okay, if I drink this much, and I leave by like 9:30, I still have enough time to get home, get everybody home, and get home by 10:30, you know. And then a couple more minutes later, I'm looking at my clock, and I'm like, okay, if I leave at, you know, 9:15 or 9:45, and I basically kept doing it, and then all of a sudden I looked at my clock, and it was 10:15. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I gotta be home by 10:30. This is so good. Let's go, you know. So we all pile up in the car, and I know you guys have a lot of roads here that are wavery, because I've been on them all day. And I was on a road much like that, and I had too much to drink, like way too much to drink. I should not have been driving then. I should have just called my parents and bit the bullet. But I'm like, no, I'm going to get these people home, and I can drink and drive. It's fine. And so I go, and I slid on some ice, and my car rolled into an embankment and flipped over on its side. And I sobered up in like, you know, basically two seconds. I mean, it's like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And thank God it was like in front of a house. And so I had to call my mom again. And all I said was, Mom, I'm sorry. And she said, oh my God. And this is that I totaled two of her cars. You know, this time it took a while for us to get another car because we had just gotten a new car. I got kicked off of car insurance, you know. My mom had to stop going to her, she was taking a college class at this point, and my mom had to stop going to her college class. And she comes out, there's police officers now involved because an ambulance had to come. One of my friends got hurt. You know, and I was really, really lucky that night because it was a windy road and no other car was coming, you know, because really it could have been a really, really bad accident. You know, and I'm sure, I mean, I know people who have gotten in accidents like that. It could have been a really bad accident. And the police officer has me in his car, and all I can think of is, how am I going to get out of this? You know, what am I going to say? How am I going to get out of this? I'm not even thinking about my mother. I'm not thinking about the friend who, and actually it was her fault anyway that she got hurt because she wasn't wearing her seatbelt. Everybody else that was wearing their seatbelt didn't get hurt. So it's her fault, you know what I mean? And I definitely felt that way. I had that venomous, like, you are not going to, you know, take away my drinking or accuse me of anything. It's always everybody else's fault, no matter what. It's always everybody else's fault. So my mom came and got me, and actually at the hospital, because the cop is driving me down to, I guess we had to go see my friend and also make sure I was okay, you know. And I was really lucky that night because I knew a friend. I had a friend who was a detective, a Montgomery County detective, and I threw his name around, you know, in the hopes that it would work. And I think it did because, I should have really had a lot more happen to me. But he said, you know, I'm not going to have your parents suffer for your stupidity. And he sent me on my way, you know. And I was like, yes, I got away with that one, you know. And my mom was like, what's the matter with you? What am I going to do with you? And I felt a little bit of remorse, you know how that is. I felt a little bit of remorse, but it really was not enough to like stop. I'm just not going to stop drinking. And at this point, we don't have a problem. But this is pretty much the year that I'm drinking. Like, this is the first year of my drinking. I totaled two cars. It's like, I don't know, you know, but we're not ready to see that that might be a problem, you know, because everybody drinks. Everybody drinks. It's fine, you know. So a little while later, I start skipping school, you know, because I can't make it through the day. I have to drink. I start stealing my dad's beer because he drinks every day, and he drinks like 3 or 4 cases a week, so he doesn't miss a few here and there, you know, and I put them right where he puts them, you know. I drink them, and I put them right where he puts his empties, so he doesn't know, you know, and I'm stealing from him to buy the things that I need. My mom showed me how to sign out some money from my savings bonds, and so I started spending my college money, basically, like the money that my grandmother would give me every year. She would give me every birthday, she would give me a savings bond, you know, 100 here, 50 there, whatever. I started using that to get the different things I needed because the bank would let me do that. You know, and I just started, like, basically becoming nothing, my senior year, I was like 17 years old, and I'm hanging out, and I ran with people, actually, that were willing to let me run with them for a little while anyway. I was definitely doing things for drugs and alcohol that I don't feel very proud of, but that's what you have to do. It's the price of drinking, you know. It's just the way it is. And so I'm hanging out, and I get to hang out one more night this weekend. My parents are letting me out all night, you know, one more time. And I think at this point, they just don't quite know what to do with me. And so I go to Maryland University to hang out with a friend that had just graduated, and we're getting high in his dorm room, and the RA kind of busts in, and he says, the cops are on their way, and just, what are you doing, you know? And this is really where I had gotten. I was getting high, and I was like, well, if the cops are coming and they're on their way, can I please finish getting high? You know? And because I'm like, you're just the RA, who cares? You know? But the cops come in, and here's how I think. I pretty much had a higher power working in my life at different times. I don't think he necessarily kept me safe when I wrecked my car, because, and this is just something that I believe, there's been people that I love who have died in car accidents, and so I don't think God sort of picks and chooses who's going to live. I really just, whenever I drink, I'm playing Russian roulette with my life, and I just didn't get the bullet every single time, you know? I don't know why that is, and I don't know how that is, but that's what happened. And so I'm someone who, and still today, like, I'm a liar, okay? And I'm a cheat, all right? But if you ask me a direct question, I don't know why this is, but I can't lie to you. If you ask me a direct question, you know, I haven't figured out how to get around that or something. And the cop asked me how old I was, you know? And I was like, I'm 17. And he says, you shouldn't have said you were 17, because now I have to arrest you, you know? And and it was like one of those, like, everybody I was hanging out with was 18, so they all got off the hook. It was a bad night for me. So he arrests me, puts me in handcuffs, takes me down to the dorm room. I got to look at all the college people who are like, what's going on? What's happening, you know? But I'm being smart. I'm being a smart person, you know, smarty pants, because I'm like telling him that puts me in the back, and I'm telling him that the handcuffs are really uncomfortable. Can you like loosen them for me? You know, I don't know how you can stand this. And I asked him to change the radio station that he was listening to something with better music. You know, we get to the holding place or whatever, and he's like, you know, what's your number? I got to call your family. And I said, they're not gonna come. They're not going to come. Now, my father had always said, if the cops call, I am not coming to get you. It's not happening. And so, and I believed him, you know. I mean, I had no reason to not believe my father, right? So that weekend, my uncle was staying with, visiting us. And my father and my uncle have an interesting relationship, but they like compete, you know, brothers, and this is what's going on in my family, and this is what's going on in your family. And so it was particularly hurtful to have the cops call this weekend. You know what I mean? And my dad answered the phone, right? And I'm in the cell. They had me in the little cell. I'm like, you know, I had to like take off my shoes and my jewelry and fingerprint me, and they took my picture and all these things. And they called. I was in the cell when they called, and my dad hung up. My dad said, keep her, and hung up. And I said, I told you so, you know? But I didn't, it was like, it just didn't dawn on me, you know? And my mother apparently was in the shower, I found out later, and when she came out, my dad was like, your daughter's in jail, go get her, you know? And she came and got me, and we got in the car, and she asked me, she was like, What is wrong? What can I do for you? How can I help you? And I just went on a tirade. I went on this, you know, you don't understand. And at this point, like, she knew, she was kind of getting done with my father drinking on some level, you know? And so she was realizing that alcohol had something to do with that, and I played it up, you know? At this point in my life, I still got two more years of drinking in me, and I was just like, you know what? If you would just leave Dad, my life would be fine, you know? And it's your fault for marrying him, and it's his fault for all of these things, and anything to just deflect, you know? Get it off of me, and let me go on with the rest of my life. So I barely graduated from high school. Literally, I pretty much lost credit in all my classes, and I don't think this would happen today. And I'm grateful that this wouldn't happen today. But I basically went to all of my teachers. I wrote an appeal letter. The appeal letter was really, really simple. It said, "I don't want to be here next year. You don't want me to be here next year. So if we could just push everything up to like a C or even a D, I don't care. Just I want my diploma." And it was a little nicer than that, but it was to the point, and they were like, okay, you know, because that's, and this shows, like, how delusional I am, because I'm thinking I'm just a good girl that drank too much, you know, but they're like, here's your diploma, get out, you know what I mean? We don't want you here, get out. And so now I'm out of high school, and what am I going to do? I don't know what I'm going to do, because I don't have any skills. I don't want to do so. I know I'll go to college, because isn't that what everybody does? They go to college. The problem with that was took my SATs. I took them on a Saturday up near a girlfriend of mine's house where we were going to have a party that night. And the test is like 6-8 hours. I mean, the test is really, really long, okay? And I'm sitting there and I'm looking at the clock and I'm like, I can't sit here. I can't sit here and take this test. So I just put C's for all the answers. Like, just straight down. I was done with that test in like 3 hours, you know? And I turned it in and I said, bye! And I went to my party, you know? And the test scores came in 900. I got a 900. They give you 200 just for writing your name, okay? But I'm like, it's fine. And my parents are like thinking they're so proud of me because I'm going to take my SATs because I'm really going to try to get into college, right? So I go to Montgomery College because it's a community college and they don't really require, I mean, if you get a diploma from, you know, a high school, you can go to a community college. So I sign up. I take only one or two classes. That's it. That's all. We're just going to try it. And I couldn't show up for class, and so I drop them, you know? And my mom, thank God, is letting me live with her, but I'm also kind of staying at friends' houses. So the time that I'm at my parents' is getting shorter and shorter, and the time that I'm out is longer and longer, you know? And so I failed, or I dropped out, and so I'm like, I'm going to try next semester. And it's still, these stories are still working. Like, I just had a really hard life, you know? And if you had the life that I had, you would drink like I drank, and these things would happen in your life. And it's still working with people, you know? So we're keeping the game going. As long as it's working, right, we're going to keep doing it. And I'm not tired yet. I'm fine. It's everybody else. And I actually believe this, okay? I mean, looking back on it, I'm like, I don't know how I could believe it, right? But I'm believing that my life is fine, okay? But I can't even show up to, like, classes that are, like, you know, at 11 o'clock. You know what I mean? Like, it's 11 o'clock, but I can't show up because I was out the night before, and I just can't. And I can't look you in the eye, and I can't do these things. I'm just not really good at them, you know. And so the next semester rolls around, and I try it again. I register for school, and we're going to go to school. This time I don't even go. Like, I don't even show up to class, and I forget to drop out. So now we have a 0.0 for our college tries, and my parents are like, I don't know what to do with you, and I'm now staying out more and more with friends, you know. And so I got engaged to this guy because I'm like, you know what, I have to settle down. I have to do something, you know. So I found a guy, and this is seriously how I did it. And I don't know why I thought this was a great plan, okay, at all. But this guy was going to be getting an inheritance. Not a huge inheritance, okay, not really at all, you know, but he was going to get an inheritance, and I thought, all right, this is my man, because he's going to have an inheritance, he can take care of me. And so I honed in on him, okay, and worked him. And he did, he asked me to marry him, you know, everything is great. And the problem is, he wasn't really kind of into drinking, really. And the only time I could drink when I was with him was when I was, like, with his friends or, like, his grandmother, who was a major drinker. She loved screwdrivers, and I loved drinking them with her. So we were always up in she lived in Manassas. No, Stafford. She lived in Stafford in that community, gated community. I forget the name of it. Anyway, and I was like, can we go see your grandmother all the time? I'm like, oh, and he's thinking, you know, I really care about him. I didn't, not really. But I was only drinking when we would go see his grandmother, and I was losing my mind. I was like, so just angry, you know, and like, Kurt, and he and I were fighting. I mean, and he and I had an aggressive... I attract aggressive men, okay? I wonder why. I'm such a sweet person. But I do. I attract these aggressive men who want to beat me up, okay? They want to beat me up. And for the longest time, I thought... Now, granted, I'm not into, like, you know, violence today, and I definitely think if people are in an abusive relationship, that's really sick, and they should get out. But I was in an abusive relationship, but I had a part in that, you know? And I certainly instigated and had a mouth on me. And I was a smart, I was just not a nice person, you know. And I would provoke him to that point. I would. And so we had those kind of fights, and they were getting pretty bad, you know. And so I don't know how to get out, and so I start letting my mom see some of the bruises and stuff like that. And so I do it, like, sneakily, you know, because I can't stand on my own 2 feet and get out. And I can't say I was wrong, right? I was wrong about this guy, okay? So they moved me out. Now my dad comes, and he moves me out, basically, while my fiancé is at work, you know? And I can't imagine, even today, what my parents were going through watching their daughter self-destruct like this. I can't imagine. I don't have any children, so I don't know. I don't know what it was like, you know? So I'm at home now, and they're really happy, right? Because what are we going to do with you? So she's like, you got to get a job, you know? So I'm like, all right, I'll get a job. And so I work at Walmart, because that's really all I can do, right? Because I don't have any other skills or whatever. It lasted about 3 months, because I can't show up. I mean, I can't. I just can't show up. I can't look people in the eye. I can't do anything productive. It's just all I can do is drink. And that's all I want to do, really. I mean, and I don't understand why people are, like, bugging me and stuff like that. And so then I go to this, I started hanging out with computer people now, right? And I definitely started, like, definitely finding the people who would allow me to drink like I drank, you know? And so I started hanging out with these computer people, and we go to this conference in Atlanta, and I'm drinking. I mean, and these are things happened when I drank, like bad stuff sometimes, you know what I mean? But it was because I was drinking, you know? So this guy started doing some stuff that worked at the hotel, inappropriate stuff, and I had had quite a few drinks, and I'm definitely underage, so I removed myself from the situation, which is actually good for me. Normally, I'm right along doing the inappropriate stuff, and I start complaining about this person, and my friends are like, you should call the cops. Well, half of my friends are like, don't call the cops. You're not old enough. You shouldn't even be here. You know, what's wrong with you? And the other half's like, no, that's wrong, and he should. So I call the cops, and I'm like, the cops show up, and like I said, I don't know. I was, like, blessed with not getting into major, major trouble for stuff. But I caused drama pretty much everywhere I went. And I still had, like, my life is just my life, you know. And because they weren't the same people, because eventually I would drop you once you started getting a clue that maybe there was something that I could be doing differently, that these things might not be happening in my life, I dropped you. We were done. In fact, I was like 2 steps before you were in that place, because I couldn't afford that. You know what I mean? Because we can't afford not drinking. We can't afford anybody to talk about it, so we got to go to the next friend. But the thing got so bad that they wanted me to call my parents, and I had gotten myself pretty worked up, so I did. I called my parents, and I told them about this incident. And they had to come from Poolsville, Maryland, all the way to Atlanta, Georgia, to come get me. Okay? And they did. They did. And my friend stayed with me, thank God. You know, so there was no talking. There was no talking on the entire ride back. It was uncomfortable, okay? But that still wasn't enough. All of the things that had happened in my life, none of it was enough. None of it was enough to get me sober, you know? And so now, like, I'm living, basically I'm out of, we're done with the house because I can't live in the house anymore. And so I'm living with a good friend of mine. I got no girlfriends in my life because I slept with all their boyfriends, and they don't really like that. You know, they have problems with that, and they don't want to hang out with you. And so I have basically three guys that will pal around with me and hang out with me. And my greatest enabler, whom I hold dear to my heart, because if it wasn't for him, I would be dead. I would be dead if it wasn't for this guy. He's letting me just hang out with him, you know, and because he doesn't want anything to bad. I guess he just doesn't want anything bad to happen to me, you know. And so he's supporting me. He's paying me. And about 3 months before I stopped drinking, I have a party at my house with you know, a couple of my old friends. They decide to show up to this party. It's New Year's Eve, '96. Going into '96, and we're drinking like we always drink, and I'm outside, I'm having a good time, and I've already had enough, you know, drinking. And I'm getting ready to come in and make myself a drink, and my friends are pouring out the alcohol. And I lost it. And this is a moment of clarity. This is the only moment of clarity I've had up to this point in the entire, in my entire drinking career. But it was almost like I was watching myself act this way about my friend pouring out the alcohol. And I was like, you can't pour it out. And I'm losing it, almost like someone's like killing somebody, right? And he's like, well, I don't understand why. And so I'm trying to explain it to him that, well, you see, I wanted to make myself a drink. And, you know what it's like when you want to do something, and now you're pouring the alcohol out. And I was trying to make it make sense why I was so hysterical about how he was throwing the alcohol out. And he was like, you know what, you have a problem. And then we had an argument for most of the night, like I'm crying and all this stuff. But something shifted in that moment, you know. And I was like, maybe my drinking isn't right. You know what I mean? Maybe it's not. Maybe there's something. And then so fast forward to my last night of my drinking, which was just like any other night. I had no idea that it was going to be my last night drinking. It was my birthday, right? So we have like a full, we've come full circle. I started on my birthday. I'm going to end on my birthday. You know, I'm drinking at my home bar, and at this point I am drinking every day, okay? It's every day for my last 90 days drinking, I'm drinking every day. And I have a bar, that's why I call it my home bar, because I go there, it's just like my home group, I go every week, I went to my home bar every night, you know, and I'm like, nothing's happening. I'm drinking, but I just, like, my body's drunk, but my mind is like, you know, like all this stuff is racing. And everyone's like, aren't you having a good time? I'm like, yeah, I'm having a great time. But I wasn't having a good time. You know what I mean? It was like, I don't think alcohol stopped working. I think my brain just sped up or something. It was like louder than the drinking, really. And they take me home from the party or whatever, and we're living with this boyfriend I'm dating and his mom at this point, right? So I get there to the house, and they lived on a farm, and there was a horse that came up to the gate, and it was an electric fence, and I always wanted to pet the horse, but I can't even stand right now at this point, so I want to go over to the electric fence and pet the horse. Well, he thought that was a bad idea, and I'm thinking now with my brain, like, that was a bad idea, but I was so not okay with him not letting me do that. And so I start screaming at the top of my lungs, which I do this a lot at this point, where people aren't treating me right. You're not treating me right. I can't believe that you're not going to let me pet this horse. You don't love me. You've never loved me. And his mom comes out, and she says, you have to leave. I'm done with this. And I'm thinking, what? You know? What? I don't understand. And apparently there were many nights like that, but I don't remember it. You know what I mean? I think this is like my first night, and I think she's being really unreasonable, you know? But it is like 2:30 in the morning, okay? So and I'm thinking my boyfriend's going to, like, you know, somehow fix it. He doesn't. And he says, I got to take you home. Now, I haven't been home in a really long time at this point. And any contact that my parents have with me is like in the drunken stupor of the like 2, 3 o'clock in the morning phone calls where I call my mom and I tell her how much I love her at 3 o'clock in the morning. But that's all, the only contact that she has with me at this point. And I'm like, you want me to go home? I can't go home. So now I'm thinking, I can't believe this is happening to me, because I usually have a backup boyfriend. Okay? In the sense of, like, I always got somebody on the side to go to, right? And I'm always knowing I'm a couple steps ahead of you before you leave me. I know you're out the door, and so I'm going to go. And somehow, and this is where I think it was God, okay? I just didn't have another plan. I had no other option. I was out of any kind of answers. I had nowhere to go. Home was the only place I could go at this point. So I said, okay. Now, we're fast thinkers, or at least I know I am. So we're going home, and I'm thinking, all right, what am I going to do? Because I haven't seen my mom in so long, and it's going to be really awkward just walking into the house and be like, hi, Mom, I'm home, without a plan. So, and at this point, you know, a lot of people had talked to me about my drinking, and so I told my boyfriend in the hopes that he would forgive most stuff and actually not take me home is if I said, you know what, I'll go to AA. I'll go to AA and I'll get some help for my drinking. Because I was hoping that would somehow be, like, enough just to say it. Because I didn't really want to come to AA. I didn't really want to stop drinking. Even at this point, with all of that stuff, I didn't want to stop drinking. Because it's the answer. You know, it's the solution to my problems. You know, if you people would just act right, it would be fine. So I go home and I run into the house and I say, Mom, I'm an alcoholic and I'm going to get some help. And she was like, go to bed, sleep it off, you know. And so I go downstairs and I say a prayer. Now, God and I have come to better terms in sobriety. You know, I certainly had pitch-hitting things in my drinking, you know. God, please get me out of this one, or please help me, or whatever. But no real connection to a higher power. I said a prayer, and I said, God, I don't know what an alcoholic is, but if I am one, please help me get where I got to go. That's all I said, you know. And I went to sleep. And I slept, and I was really drunk, but I slept. It was like the first kind of real sleep in a while. I didn't pass out. You know, and I got up probably a couple hours later, like noonish, and I went straight upstairs to the phone book and came straight downstairs and I called AA. I didn't even say hi to anybody in my house or anything. I just called Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know you could find Alcoholics Anonymous in the phone book. It was almost like I was just being guided by something else. You know, and certainly I was being guided by something else because I didn't know. I mean, the people I was hanging out with were not talking about, hey, you can find AA in the phone book, you know. And it wasn't like there was any commercials or any of that stuff. And I called the desk and they were like, well, there's a meeting tonight, Sunday night, and told me the time. And I got a friend to take me and I went, you know. And I didn't share, but my friend did. She shared that she was with me and that she thought I was an alcoholic and needed to be there. And I'm like, thank you very much, you know. And another God moment, you know what I mean? And people surrounded me because I wasn't telling people that I was an alcoholic. No way. And I got people's phone numbers and we said the prayer at night or when we were done. And I thought, oh, I can do this. I know the Lord's Prayer, you know, I've gone to CCD and Catholic, you know, Catholic school on Wednesdays and Catholic church on Sundays, and I know this prayer, so I can do this. And you know what, it doesn't matter what gets you to the next meeting, like, that's really what got me to the next meeting, like, okay, this is a little cool, I could do this. And I made it to my second meeting, and there was a member of my home group to be at that meeting, he was chairing it. And he asked me to get phone numbers and girls' phone numbers. And I said, no, but can I have yours? And he gave me his. Thank God, actually, he gave me his. And I met my home group, you know, within a couple of days. And as you know, because I know members of my home group have spoke here, it's a huge, you know, meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with a lot of different variety of people to choose from. There's a lot of young people, and, you know, there's a lot going on there. It's like this energy thing. And they swept me up because I did not want to stop drinking. I didn't come to AA to stop drinking. I came to AA to keep the guy in my life who was supporting my habit. And I was hoping that if I got here and stayed here for a little while, he would forgive everything, and I could go back to drinking. That's what I wanted to do. And when I saw the 12 steps on the wall, I thought, okay, 12 steps, 12 grades, you graduate when you get to the 12th step, and then you can go back to drinking. And I really thought that you were going to teach me how to drink normally, you know, or something. And I didn't believe people when they got up there and were talking, like, years of sobriety, that they actually were not drinking for that long. I was like, no, you're getting some somewhere, you're doing something. There is no way that you haven't had a drop of alcohol for this long, you know. And my sobriety story hasn't been all peaches, you know, at all, especially coming in here with not wanting to drink. That was or not wanting to stop drinking. That was definitely a surrender for me. That took a while to come. I didn't quite get the first step, which is actually, I think, the most important step that has to be done 100%. The rest of them are like, you know, whatever. But the first step is we don't drink. And so I could get the unmanageability part for sure. Like, I understood that because, well, there was nothing in my life to manage because I had managed to drink them all away, right? But I didn't quite understand powerlessness. And it took me a really long time to understand powerlessness. But as I was looking back on my drinking, I thought, you know, I didn't even want to drink. When I started out, remember, I was like, no, my father drinks too much. I don't want to touch this stuff. But right then, it was like, I was just powerless. You know, I had to drink it. And when I drank one, I never drank one. It was never enough for me. And if you wanted me to come to your house and you only had like two or three beers, I wasn't coming. And I would tell you, you don't have enough alcohol, I'm not coming. You know? So that makes me alcoholic. You know what I mean? When I drink, it changes something in me and I want to drink more. And I don't know why, and I'm not going to stop until I pass out. I'm just not going to stop until it passes out. You know, and I ended up dating the guy that was at my first couple meetings. It was like it talks about in the 12 and 12 and the 12th step. It was boy meets girl on AA campus. We did not have good sobriety. I attract people who are going to be abusive. I had an abusive relationship. I'm very, very sick. I stayed in it for 7 years. I lost my brother when I was 4 years sober. He died in a drinking and driving accident. That was really hard. That was really, really hard. And I was 4 years sober. It was in 2000. And it was a month before I got married to this guy. And we got married in the same church that we had his funeral in. And, you know, I know that I didn't have a higher power that could get me through that until I went through that. You know, and I didn't realize that my higher power was one that caught, like, at that point, in that moment when that happened, my higher power was someone that made that stuff happen, if that makes sense. And I know I told you what I feel about it today, and through the process of grieving that and coming out to the other side, I know that it wasn't my higher power, you know. It was my brother. My brother got behind the wheel, and he drank, and he played Russian roulette with his life, and it cost him his life. And, you know, and so I got married, and it was like, wasn't really joyous because honestly, like, he asked me to marry him and I said yes because I still have that idea that these outside things are going to fix me. If I just get the husband and I get the car and I have the kid and I have the house, that's going to be the answer, you know? And at 7 years sober, I was thinking about drinking, you know, because I didn't know how to get out of the relationship without drinking. I didn't know how to walk away, but it had gotten to the point where that's exactly what needed to happen. And I was at a conference the night that I was going to leave. I got up the day that I told him I couldn't be with him anymore. I didn't know that I was going to tell him that I'm not going to be with you tonight. But as with anything, like when I called AA, God really does help me in those moments when that's what has to happen. And I'm not saying that, like, I'm definitely not proud about the fact that I got married and divorced in sobriety, because I know that today I am married to a man whom I love with everything I have. We have a true partnership. You know, AA has taught me how to have a true partnership with another human being. And I was not practicing AA when I was with this guy. It was not happening. He was going to fix me. He was the answer. And it just didn't work out. And I just didn't want to drink. I had gotten to a point at 7 years sober. I picked up my 7-year chip and I thought, you know what? If these 7 years are anything like the next seven, I don't want them. And I was going to drink that night, you know, and divine, because I celebrated 7 in March and left my husband in June. And God really helped me because it really came down to that for me. And that's, anything big like that comes down to that for me. I don't know. But it taught me that I wanted something different. And the next 3 years, because I started dating my husband, and we got married like 3 years after that. But those were the hardest 3 years, like going through like the divorce and really looking at myself and really seeing myself, because I had nothing. I'm 7 years sober, and I'm back really where I started from when I got here, you know, with nothing. I mean, I had a job, thank God. Actually, my job fired me. That was a really bad year, actually. You know, because I left my husband, my job laid me off. It was a bad year. But you know what? God was there through the whole thing. And he has taught me that, my higher power has taught me that he doesn't make bad things happen, but he makes good things come out of bad things. You know what I mean? And I am so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I have more today. I have a life I never knew I wanted. I never knew I wanted it, you know? And I know I said that I wanted, like, the job, the car, and the husband, but it's nothing like I imagined it would be. He's not my higher power, you know? And if, heaven forbid, if anything happened to him, I would be okay. You know what I mean? AA would see me through it. And today, the thing that matters to me most is helping other people and giving this thing away. And I love the people that I sponsor. I love the people that they sponsor. I love my girlfriends in AA, you know? And they matter more to me than my job, how much money I make, you know, what I'm going to do. I mean, I'm in college right now. I have no idea what I'm going to do with my life. I have no idea. People keep asking, what are you going to do when you grow up? I have no idea. But you know what? I don't need to know. I really believe that God is going to show me what it is I need to do. He's going to put it in front of me. Now, that doesn't mean I don't have to do the footwork, right? I have to do the footwork. But it started with just being willing to work the steps with my sponsor. You know? That's it. And my sponsor has guided me through all of that. You know? When I got divorced, I thought I got nobody. And she's like, I'm not going anywhere. And that meant so much to me, you know, and she and I have had an interesting relationship over the past, you know, 12 years, but I wouldn't change any of the past 12 years for anything. I would sign up for all of it all over again because it has given me so much, you know, and I think about my sponsor and I think about her sponsor and I think about, you know, the things that we do. Like, we actually get together once a year, too, and we have, like, a little, you know, family weekend where we, like, we work the steps together and really, like, you know, because I think we're, I'm constantly working the steps, constantly, you know. They are, like it says in the 12 step, you know, I do this daily. And I don't know. I cannot imagine my life any different. And I want to thank Billy for asking me, and thanks for letting me share. Thank you.